Jesus said to them, "Be woke, for you know neither the day nor the hour when I'll show up again. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. Are you woke?" You may think my grammar is failing me, which might be true. But consider this definition from the Urban Dictionary. Woke. Although an incorrect tense of awake, a reference to how people should be aware of current affairs. Used in a sentence, while you're obsessing about the Kardashians, there are millions of homeless in the world. Stay woke. Being woke means being aware of what's going on in the community, especially as it relates to social justice. Has little to do with the physical state of being awakened, although that might be fitting for some of us this morning who are celebrating at a wedding last night, late into the night, with Ron and Laurel Hertzler's son, Brendan, and his new bride, Meredith. In our second hour this morning, one of the things we'll do is hang symbolic veteran dog tags on a tree outdoors in a ceremony called the Whitting Tree. And I'm so glad my good friend Glenn Miller is here to help us celebrate that event this morning. Glenn and Mary work tirelessly in veterans affairs in our community, and growing out of Glenn's own pain as a veteran, finding ways to redeem that pain that blesses and encourages and supports our whole community, whether we're veterans or not. Glenn, thanks so much for being here. Witting means being done in full awareness or consciousness, deliberate, conscious of awareness of the full facts of the situation. And this Witting Tree service reminds us of the fact that we are to have our wits about us, so to speak, to the 22 or more U.S. veterans who take their own lives each day. So think about it. On a typical day already, probably by almost 10 o'clock in the morning, likely there would have been three or four veterans who decided life was not worth living, and whatever way, took their own lives. A result of the soul wounds that become unbearable and our society sleeps through it. This witting is pretty much the same thing as being woke. Are we woke and witting? Now, in the New Testament text for today, the Matthew's Gospel, Jesus tells his disciples a story, a parable, which leaves me and Pat and maybe some of the rest of us scratching our heads a little bit. How do we hear this story as a story that's filled with anything but judgment without much grace? What is the main characteristic, the main point of this parable? I've learned that a characteristic of a parable, and I'm sure Jessica's learning this in seminary as well, that a parable has one central theme or message, and it's dangerous to try to find meaning in each individual part of that parable. A clue, I think, for this meaning of this parable has to do with being woke and witting. Let's listen to the story a little more closely and consider what might be going on here. Now, Jesus is, like I said, teaching his disciples, his followers, and he was critiquing the religious rulers of the day. And he was speaking about the return of the Son of Man. And later on, he describes how he shows up in the least of these, my brothers and sisters. And the ideas seem to overlay each other as they coalesce in this parable of the 10 bridesmaids. The story tells us about these 10 bridesmaids who are waiting to meet the bridegroom. It's my understanding that a part of the Jewish tradition was that at the time of a wedding, the bridegroom would come to the house of the bride, where the party would continue and the marriage would be consummated. And now the task of the bridesmaids was to welcome the bridegroom when he arrived. So all 10 turn up, the bridesmaids, and they have lamps which are safely assumed to be lit and burning with enough oil for the evening. And they begin their vigil of waiting for the bridegroom to come, as is customary. Well, now, Middle Eastern schedules of the ancient world were not unlike some of the customs of cultures in our day. I remember going to church in the time when I lived in Ghana, North West Africa, and we'd hear the church bell ring about 10 o'clock or something like that, and knew we probably had about another hour to make our way to the church. Basically, it means you turn up when you turn up, which, of course, for some of us who are punctuality, all about perfection as it comes to punctuality, is annoying to say the least. But the bridegrooms wait, and they wait, and they wait, and they collectively doze off because it's evening, night. And suddenly there's a fuss and a flutter, and a figure of the bridegroom approaches. And now is their moment, and now is their time. But lo and behold, the oil has run low, and an issue arises which suddenly becomes ironically inflamed. Bob, I knew you'd laugh. 5 of the bridesmaids had brought extra oil, but 5 had not. They were out, and they needed more. So the 5 who run out turn to their sisters and say, "Please, would you give us some oil? You're our family, you're our friends." But the wise ones say, "No, there is not enough to go around. No, we have ours, and we are going into the party. Sorry." Now, I have to say that at this point, on so many occasions, I've heard this parable spoken about, a little bit like Pat has. I've been told that I should be like those wise ones that have extra oil for their lamps, extra faith, maybe extra preparedness, extra something. But I have to admit, on reading this parable again, that when I thought about it and became honest with the text, which I think we're called to do, I thought, I don't want to be associated with those wise ones at all. My sympathies and identification are with the foolish ones. I admitted it. Because we back up some chapters in Matthew 5, we are told by Jesus, "If anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give them your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go the second one. Give to everyone who begs of you." I guess that doesn't mean oil, though. "And do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you." And at the heart of Jesus' message lies a message of generosity. God, who invites us to generously give at great cost to ourselves. I can't help but think of Paul's letter to the Philippians, in which we find this great kenosis hymn. Kenosis, the Greek word for self-emptying. Jesus empties himself of all to share in our existence. The example and behavior of the so-called wise ones to me seems abhorrent. There's almost an air of self-satisfaction and smugness as they go into the party. We got it. We're the wise ones. Do we care about those being left behind? Well, yeah, but they have it coming to them. They should have been prepared, like we are. These are their sisters, their friends. At this moment, the wise ones appear to me to be more like the Pharisees than Jesus is the one is criticizing. So, what happens to these women left outside? They act. They do not sit idly by, cursing their fate. They run off into the night to find some oil. In the middle of the night, their lamps are already out, so they need to somehow find their way through the darkness. And then they return. They somehow find someone that's willing to give them oil. And I thought, what an effort. They return to the house of the bride, and they knock at the door, equipped and ready now to enter the party, arriving late, but remember, earlier, everyone's late. But the door is shut. The interaction sounds so final, so condemning. And I like the way you read it, Barbara, with that sense of finality. You can almost hear the banging of the door. And the door was shut. The other bridesmaids come also saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he replied, saying, "Truly I tell you, I do not know you." Now I ask, does this in any way or form square with what Jesus teaches us in Matthew 7? When he says, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be shut." Right? "And the door will be open to you. For anyone who asks receives, and anyone who searches finds, and for everyone who knocks, the door will be open." Inside are a group who refuse to do what Jesus taught. Share generously, even if it means at your own expense and suffering. And outside is a group who's experiencing rejection despite their last-ditch efforts to knock on a door which Jesus said would be opened. How do we make sense of this parable? Now, Jesus sums up this parable with these perplexing words. "Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know either the day or the hour." Be woke. Have your wits about you. Be aware. Were you listening carefully? This hit me this week as a kind of clue into this parable. Jesus doesn't mention oil or the wisdom or folly of those who bring extra or who fail to. Jesus critiques those who fell asleep. And remember in verse 5, as the bridegroom was delayed, all of them become drowsy and slept. All of them. All 10. And I can just hear Paul saying to the Romans in his letter, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The wise one, the foolish one. Jesus' warning to the disciples to stay awake, to be ready for what is at hand, to be engaged with his presence as the presence of the kingdom of heaven. The bridegroom is coming, and as we read later in this chapter, may show up among us as one who is hungry or thirsty or lacks adequate clothing or housing or who is in prison or who is a veteran and feels hopeless or needs a hot meal. Be woke. Be woke to Christ coming again in any manner, in any way, in any place, in any time. I wonder, does anyone remember what happened then in Matthew 26, the next chapter here after the one that we're feeling, that we're addressing this morning? In that chapter of Matthew's gospel, Jesus shares the Last Supper with his disciples and then heads out to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. He takes Peter and James and John with him, and they wait for him, and he goes on to pray, and they what? They fall asleep. The disciples, who had not long before heard the story of the wise and the foolish bridesmaids with all the injunctions to stay awake, go to sleep. They sleep as their master struggles with his fate and prepares for the ending of his life. And three times Jesus invites them to be woke, to awaken. They're not ready. The third time, he tells them that his betrayer is at hand. What a perplexing scene we have left with. Bridesmaids inside who seem selfish, bridesmaids outside who feel excluded, disciples who fall asleep. Where is hope? Well, we need to go one more chapter in Matthew chapter 27. We're told about another door that is shut, a stone rolled by Joseph of Arimathea across the tomb of Jesus. A door closed, a barrier between life and death. And this door is the most impenetrable of all doors. Matthew reports that after 3 days, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary go to the tomb, and as they approach there, they experience what they describe as an earthquake and an angel descending from heaven who opens the tomb. Inviting the women inside, he tells them, "Do not be afraid. For I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He has been raised. As they say, come and see the place where he lay." Folks, we've been wise. We've been foolish. We have been woke. We have been asleep. We have been witting. We have been unwitting. It is not the extra oil. It is not running off into the night to get oil. It is not the knocking at the door. It is not even staying awake that makes the difference. It is Jesus himself who bursts forth into new life, is risen from the dead, that opens the doors and reawakens us all. God with us, Emmanuel. God desires life and fullness and for all of us to experience the party, to celebrate with the bridegroom as he shares his life with us all. That's the gospel message. But then, in gratitude for God's grace to the wise and the foolish, we are to be woke and witting. And we do that by preparing turkey dinners that feed over 100 people yesterday afternoon here. We are woke and witting as we remember these veterans among us that feel so hopeless. We are woke and witting, and we prepare for Interfaith Hospitality Network in January, which, by the way, we still need a coordinator. Hint, hint. We are woke and witting as we condemn the senselessness of gun violence in our land. We are woke and witting, and we declare there's a place for those who've been excluded because they don't fit our definitions of gender identity. We are woke and witting, and we reach out through faith and light, like you did Friday night. We are woke and witting, and we go to work and try to understand the person that's across the political divide at the desk next to us. We are woke and witting, and we volunteer for Care and Share, and we take food to fish, and we go out of our way to greet our neighbor, even when they don't bother greeting us back. We are woke and witting, and we write letters, and we make calls to elected officials at all levels of government. We are woke and witting, and we learn about racism, our broken system of justice for offenders, about immigration, about alternatives to war, and standing for peace. We are woke and witting, and we find the stories of hope and grace and goodness and beauty in life. Even as we heard the story of a student sharing his lunch with a friend who had come without lunch, and sparks movement and change. We are woke and witting, and we pray and we act for peace. We are woke and witting to the presence of the living Christ with us today. Thanks be to God. Amen.